right, how's everybody doing? Good, everybody warm? There's a lot more people here than I thought was going to be because of the cold weather. I was like, people going to mail it in today. So, and I slept late, so still got here early. How does that work? I don't know. Anyway, for those of you that haven't been here the last couple weeks? Okay, so a few of you guys. So we kind of embarked on a little bit of an interesting journey 2 weeks ago. We're doing a whole thing on Christian worldview and what's it good for. Not just talking about what a worldview is, but what do we actually do with it. So 2 weeks ago, we rode through the Roman Empire all the way up to the Enlightenment and the effect that Christianity's had on Western civilization, which has been a good one, right? I think we would all agree with that. And then we stopped at the Enlightenment and talked a little bit about kind of some thinking that started to take place during that time, which Mike covered last week. So if you weren't here last week, he ran through six or seven different thinkers, if you will, during that time period that really has had a significant impact on our culture today and why you see a lot of the things that we're going to talk about today, why you see these cultural issues kind of dominate our society, or at least are prevalent in our society, the way that they are is because of what Mike talked about last week, which I know that was kind of trudging through a little bit. I mean, we're talking about Nietzsche and Marx and Rousseau and Descartes and all these guys that, you know, you learn about in your philosophy class back in college or high school, if you will. But those guys have had significant impact on our culture. Western culture in particular. So today, we're going to talk about culture, what it is, how to navigate it. So before we dive in, though, somebody give me their own definition of culture and what you think it is. How would you define culture? Anybody want to take a stab at it?
It's the deep water we all swim in.
Ah, were you getting a bug in my house last night? Or, man, that's a great guess, Neil. It's a great guess. Anybody else? That's a really good one.
So I'd say it's like the standards and the norms that the community, the population.
Right. Absolutely. Yes, ma'am.
Does that mean if you don't have standards and norms, there is no culture?
I would say no. I would say you're gonna create some type of culture.
That is the culture.
Yeah. The interesting thing about it is, we'll get a definition here in just a second, but there's big culture, if you will, from a societal standpoint, and then there's mini cultures all over the place, right? Like this room has a certain culture to it. This church has a certain culture to it. Your family has a certain culture to it. Your place of employment, your gym, your community center, whatever it may be. There's culture building going on all over the place. Well, if we're looking at what it means to be a believer in culture, someone that loves Christ, it's not enough just to have a worldview that you look through to compare to the Bible, if you will, and what those values and norms are from a biblical standpoint. It's a whole other thing to what do you do with it? But it's one thing to have a pair of glasses, but if you don't use them, you know, what good are they? So, you know, really what you need to kind of ask is, from a believer standpoint, is what's your salvation for? Anybody?
To know God and to make him known.
Right. To know God and to make him known. So Ephesians 2, everybody's pretty familiar with Ephesians 2, right? Especially from a Reformed perspective. Ephesians 2, verse 10, right? For we are his workmanship, created in Christ Jesus for good works, which God prepared before him, that we should walk in them. So it's not that you're saved for, from an eternal perspective, to have eternal life and to flee the wrath of God on your sin. It's also to transform you. To do what we talked about 2 weeks ago, have an impact on society, right? Is culture a bad thing?
It can be.
But in and of itself, culture is not evil, right? I mean, there can be behaviors from culture that are evil, but there can also be good behaviors in culture as well, right? A lot of times from a believer's standpoint, what we tend to do with culture is we look at it as evil, so what do we do with it?
Reject it.
Either we reject it or we run from it. We flee it, right? Kind of our escapism, if you will. We want to avoid those controversial issues. Is Christianity a belief system that's based on escapism, though?
No.
No. So if we look at Christ and the incarnation, what is that exactly? That's not a trick question.
God coming into his created world as a human being.
As C.S. Lewis puts it, Christ entered enemy-occupied territory. Right? So he set up the mission a yard from the gates of hell, essentially, right? To do what?
Call people to his own.
Call people to his own. Save us for building his kingdom, going back to Genesis 1, right? The creation mandate. Fill the earth, subdue it, have dominion over it, build his kingdom. So a couple of quick verses, and then we'll dive a little bit into this, but I wanted to spend the first few minutes talking about, you know, from a believer standpoint, what do we do with culture? How do we typically view it? So Proverbs 29:2. When the righteous increase, the people rejoice. But when the wicked rule, the people groan. I forgot all about that passage, and through the reading this week, I stumbled on that. I'm like, oh my goodness. I mean, if there's ever a commentary on what happens when you have people that don't love Christ ruling you, right? Or creating culture, if you will. We read the passage from Jeremiah 29 2 weeks ago where in exile, God tells Jeremiah, and Jeremiah tells the people to do what? While they're in exile, get married, have families, get a job, seek the welfare of the city. What does that mean?
Look after it.
Look after the city. Promote good, right? Promote what God is all about. And then this one, John 10:10. Does anybody know that one off the top of their head? Nobody does scripture memorization in here? I'm just kidding. The thief comes only to steal, kill, and destroy. I came that they may have life and have it abundantly. What we tend to do with that is we think life abundantly is I got my get out of hell free card. I'm good. I don't have to do anything else. So you retreat, right? Instead of doing what Jesus did, which is engage, right? And the verse in Proverbs, when the righteous decrease and the wicked increase, the people groan, right? So if you put a commentary on our culture today, granted a lot of people are looking at tomorrow like it's the second coming, but what would you say about our culture today?
Certainly not Christian.
Not Christian, post-Christian. What else? What are some descriptions of our culture today?
A lot of groaning.
A lot of groaning. Not is just, go ahead.
Is it safe to call it amoral? There really aren't any. Do whatever you want to do. It's got to be right.
Mm. Lots of ways, yes.
Self-focused.
Yep. All about me. We'll get into that here in just a few minutes for sure. Absolutely. So last thing, and then we'll dive in a little bit more. So this is a quote from a guy named Thomas Howard. And he's talking more or less about the incarnation, right? He says, the incarnation takes all that properly belongs to our humanity and delivers it back to us, redeemed. All of our inclinations and appetites and capacities and yearnings and proclivities are purified and gathered up and glorified by Christ. He did not come to thin out human life. He came to set it free. All the dancing and feasting and processing and singing and building and sculpting and baking and merrymaking that belong to us and that were stolen away and into the service of false gods are returned to us in the gospel. So our salvation is for, yes, eternal suffering is of primary importance for certain. John Piper is quoted of saying, we care about all kinds of suffering, especially the eternal kind, right? But it shouldn't stop there. We should engage the culture and redeem it, right? All right. Here's what we're going to tackle today. So we're going to talk a little bit about what culture is, why it matters, kind of the current cultural landscape, or more or less kind of the cultural undercurrents that aren't so obvious, but they're there. And you can see the impact in the cultural issues, or what we like to call cultural waves, if you will, that are more obvious to us that we're impacted on a day-to-day basis with. I threw discussion up there, which is really kind of dumb because we'll discuss as we go along. So I didn't mean it to be the last bullet point, like we'll discuss at the end. But anyway. All right. Culture. So Neil said it's the water we swim in. Some people said the norms and the values, right? So has anybody heard of John Stone Street? Colson Center. He runs, Chuck Colson, you guys remember who that is? He created the Colson Center for Cultural Engagement. And he heads up that organization in Chuck's passing. And he also hosts the Breakpoint podcast. If you guys are familiar with Breakpoint, I highly recommend it to you. But he says this, culture refers to what people do with the world. We build, we invent, we imagine, we create, we tear down, we replace, we compose, we design, we emphasize, we dismiss, we embellish, we engineer, .. It's what we do with the world, right? So from a believer's standpoint, Genesis 1, right? This is what we should be doing with the world, is promoting the gospel and building his kingdom. So what happens with cultures, we become immersed in ways of thinking, patterns of living. Sometimes we're affected by cultural norms without even knowing it. So if you, like Neil said about the water that we swim in, you ever ask a fish what it means to be wet? Right? Can't tell you that because it's just what they swim in. It's the same thing for us. It's a little different though from a human standpoint because we have much greater capability for creative capability based on the fact that we're created in the image of God, different than the animal kingdom, right? Creation and culture are not the same thing. Culture is not evil in and of itself. It includes the good, the bad, the morally neutral, and the morally complex. Culture is all of those things. It's not static. You know what I mean by that? It's more dynamic, and it's not monolithic either. It's not something you can just create in a vacuum, and it's real simple. Culture is very fluid, if you will. The good thing about that is it can be changed, correct? We saw that 2 weeks ago when we studied the Christianity's influence on Western civilization. Where did Christianity get birthed out of? Yes, but what type of culture was it?
Pagan.
Roman Empire. We talked about that, right? Child sacrifice, rampant sexuality, not care for the poor, slavery was rampant, right? Women had no rights, children had no rights. And Christianity turns the world upside down in that culture. That's where it started, right? And then they went on over the next several hundred years to change culture. Anybody work in the corporate world at all? Okay, so you hear a lot in the corporate world about creating corporate culture, right? You get one CEO that leaves, you get another guy that comes in or another woman that comes in, and what do they want to do?
Change
the culture to put their stamp on it. So culture is not static. It can be changed. So from a believer standpoint, that's a very good thing, right? Because as Jane so eloquently put, we're in a post-Christian, amoral culture. A lot like the Roman Empire. So it's not hopeless. You do what Jesus did. You go into enemy-occupied territory, right? Yeah. Anybody have any comments on this quote? Ready, Phil? Okay. All right, how does it affect us? Love this quote from T.S. Eliot. "The problem of leading a Christian life in a non-Christian society is now very present to us. And as for the Christian who is not conscious of his dilemma," and he's in the majority, to catch the subtle dig there, "he is becoming more and more de-Christianized by all sorts of unconscious pressure. Paganism holds all the most valuable advertising space." So he who has the best marketing wins. Right? So I put this at the bottom. Does anybody know what this is? What are those?
Thermostat.
And thermostat and a what?
Thermometer.
What's the difference?
One tells the temperature, one creates the temperature.
So which one are you? My kids will tell you they've heard that from the time they were all that high. One sets the temperature, one reads it. So as a Christian in a post-Christian amoral society, are you setting the temperature or are you reading it? Right? Culture consists of those products of human activity that have collectively taken on a life of their own. The words we create powerfully influence our lives by convincing us of what is normal, quote unquote. As we live in culture, we become committed to its vision of life unless we're intentional otherwise. Intentional otherwise means you're this, right? We make our cultures, then our cultures shape us. All right, question for you guys. What are the often unnoticed norms of our local culture? When I say local, I mean local. What are some unnoticed norms in Kendall County?
Yeah, as outsiders coming in, there was a natural kindness and civility that we never experienced up in the Northwest.
Okay.
And so that was kind of unexpected and pleasantly so.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Anybody else? That's a positive one.
I would say a lot of people are willing to help each other here.
Okay. Positive one. What else? Let's play devil's advocate. Anybody got a negative one? Nobody's got anything? Oh, yes, sir.
It's always true, or it seems to me, having started a business in a small city like Vernon, the locals have a negative attitude of people coming into the deal. They may exhibit it, and I'm glad that y'all ran into some people that were good, but as a general rule, small cities don't want to be changed.
Okay.
So from a negative standpoint.
Yep, kind of a isolationist,
feeling here,
protective kind of, which is not necessarily a bad thing to be protective over the right things. But, okay, that's a good one. I can, like Dennis and Kate, I can relate to being an outsider, although not really because I grew up in San Antonio, but moved to Dallas, then met my wife, moved to California for 20 years, and then we moved back. So to a certain degree, I'm an outsider, but not, right? And coming back into South Texas has been a bit interesting in ways. Some of it's positive, some of it's kind of like, I didn't recognize that when I used to live here. Mm. What else? Any other?
Another one is I'm here and I close the door. Don't let anybody else in.
Yep. Yeah.
Right. Right. That's interesting. I'm here and I close the door. I like that.
Well, and this is, I know, I'll set off fireworks. But I see bumper stickers because there's a lot of people that have moved from California to the Northeast, and they'll say, "Don't bring your politics with you."
Right. Mm-hmm.
Now, we could. It's kind of a neutral comment because there's actually some good in that, and there's actually some bad in that too, right? Because mm-hmm. You can become kind of pharisaical to a certain degree, right, about your Kendall County culture. What about, let's take it out a little bit more from a Texas standpoint.
Well, going off all that, I would say unexpected norm, conservatism.
Okay.
This is conservative community.
Yep. Okay. Absolutely.
Family friendly.
Family family friendly, okay? Let's go within a national perspective. What are some unnoticed norms that are you're affected by that you don't even realize?
Independence. Pull yourself up by your bootstraps. Don't tell me what to do.
Okay. Kind of a rugged individualism,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, it's supposed to work.
As opposed to work. Say it again.
It's supposed to work.
Right.
It's a Protestant work ethic.
Okay. Those are good. What else? What about some of the things that, I'm sorry, Kevin?
No, you're good. I was just going to say the independent side leads, it's good, right? We love being independent. And then it also dovetails with, we might talk about this at some point, but the unencumbered self is this idea that you're as a person, you're free to do whatever you want. That's sort of the spirit of the age. And so our good independence married with that, you can do whatever you want, leads to some really messy places.
Absolutely. Some of those other norms that we'll get into here in a minute, and I apologize in advance, a little bit of a disclaimer. There are going to be a couple topics that are going to be a little bit, it's one of those awkward things that you kind of got to go, I got to talk about this because it's there, but we won't be too detailed, if you will. There's other unnoticed norms like maybe our society's view of sexuality. And I don't just mean gender. I mean, what do you do with sex in and of itself? What does it mean to be human? Right? These are all things that are kind of underwriting in our culture. Okay, why does culture matter? Okay, without looking at that, based on what we've said so far, why does culture matter? Maybe one or two comments. Why does it matter?
I like what you said earlier about how when we make our culture, then it then turns around and shapes us, right? So if you are making a culture that doesn't align with biblical values and truth, then that culture in turn shapes you and turns you away from God and the biblical truth and our children. And so when we have these values in culture that align with Christ, then it reinforces itself and that righteousness that you talked about earlier is what reigns and we actually like it.
Right.
And
people flourish. As a result, culture is hugely important. Hugely important. And it matters greatly. Because you're either going to shape it or it's going to shape you.
It's going to shape you to an extent. You mentioned corporate before.
Mm-hmm.
I've worked for different corporations, one of which was very family friendly. It was a Christian culture, but it didn't declare itself so.
Right.
I loved going to work there. I worked for another company where I was the oldest guy in the institution, and guess what? I didn't like going to work there because they were using language, they had experiences which were foreign to me, it just wasn't as comfortable.
Right.
I've also worked for a Christian institution.
Yeah.
Magnificent culture.
Absolutely, very important. Before we kind of dive into this slide a little bit, just a few comments from a believer's perspective. What's our source of truth?
The Bible,
God's word, right? And I think it's a fairly definitive statement as well as a true statement in the sense that Scripture describes reality, right? I like to think about reality as that thing that you bump into when you're wrong, right? Because we all have our own reality that we create. The Scripture describes reality as it actually is, right? It's kind of like gravity that way. Some people may say, I don't believe in gravity. Well, jump off a building and tell me how you feel after, right? It's scriptures are true whether you believe in them or not. So culture matters. It's all from a biblical perspective. We want to understand culture because it's essential for navigating the world we live in, right? We live in a complex world, but it's broken too. And we want to fix it or restore it. From a believer standpoint, as we become more aware of the cultural currents that shape our world, we can navigate them more effectively, right? Which is what we want to do. We want to be a light for Christ. Our age is characterized by rapid change. If you haven't paid attention over the last 20 years, you're living in freer, right?
Yeah.
It is rapidly changed. Increased diversity. So cultural literacy sounds like one of those words you study in a humanities class at some liberal arts college, but being culturally literate is actually very important. It's how you engage with the people around you, right? We need to be aware of the influence a culture has on us, so we can better, it better helps us understand why people think and act the way they do, right? That leads to more constructive and effective dialogue with those yet to believe. I like to phrase it that way because we know God is sovereign. We know God chooses, but we don't know who they are. So we always want to refer to people as those yet to believe, right? We want to have constructive dialogue with non-believers. We don't want it to be hostile. I don't know anybody signing up for that. If you love Christ and you like hostility, you need to reevaluate, right? Most importantly, it aids in identifying and resisting harmful cultural influences while promoting those values and practices that contribute to human flourishing. The gospel. That's what contributes to human flourishing. In essence, understanding culture helps us not only interpret the world we more accurately, but it also helps us shape it. Genesis 1. Fill the earth, subdue it, have dominion over it. Make God's kingdom. All right? So, how do we make God's kingdom from a believer's standpoint? You'll hear me refer to this a lot today and over the next several weeks, and I'm actually going to challenge you guys a little bit as we walk through some of these issues. To maybe look at how you shape culture from this perspective. Think about it this way. What good can you celebrate and promote? You guys heard me say this in the first week. And protect. What's missing that you can contribute to? What evil can you stop? What brokenness can you restore? When you start to look at things through those four questions as a believer, it helps you kind of interpret how you should respond in that situation. It also helps you kind of critically think through the issue as opposed to just reacting to it, right? I'm a big reactor. My wife will tell you I'm a giant emotion, which is good and not good. It's a blessing and a curse. We want to be able to critically think about our culture so we can actually engage it as opposed to just condemn it. There's a time for condemning it, for certain, but at any rate, yes.
If y'all don't think this is for real, I've been a classroom teacher, taking a year off, but I've been a classroom teacher in both public and private schools, both in Illinois down here, for 10 years. And there's been a huge shift. Kids are coming into the classroom having no earthly idea that they need to, that they can't do whatever they want to, that they can't just get up and walk around the room, they can't throw things, they can't, I mean, it's just insane. And I'm talking high school. This is not little kids. This is the big kids are doing whatever the heck they want to. Public school, private school, secular school, Christian school. It doesn't matter. They're throwing things. They're getting up. They're doing all sorts of stuff. They want to do what they want to do. And anytime they want to, they have no, many of them, about a good quarter of them or more, have no earthly idea what it means to function in a society that has respect for each other. And this is going on right now. And this has been a shift. It's a stark shift over the last 10, 11 years.
Thank you, Emily. We'll dive into some of that here in just a couple minutes, for sure, and really kind of take a harder look at that. But we also want to recognize as a believer where you're at in this particular time and place, this cultural moment, if you will. Like, you're here for a reason, right? We believe God is sovereign. You're alive at this particular time in history for a reason. You live in the place that you do for a reason. You've heard the expression, grow where you're planted, right?
Bloom
where you're planted. Yes, much better way of saying it. Much better way of saying it. Because obviously I didn't grow. So,
or just
You want to look at culture through the lens of not just these questions, but look at it through God's big story, right? And what is God's big story? Creation, fall,
redemption,
restoration, right? That's how you engage culture. You look at it from that perspective. Okay, in the interest of time, I'm gonna move on. I had a couple of questions, but... here, one question. So what examples can you guys think of where Christians have had a positive impact on culture during a dark time? And you can't use the Roman Empire one because I already used it. Think about some examples of believers that have had a positive impact on culture, either from proclamation of the gospel or some other gospel.
William Wilberforce, England.
Yeah.
Slavery.
Yeah. Yeah, and took years for that to occur. Talk about perseverance.
Yeah, and in the 1800s, the Methodists changed society and fairness and child labor laws and stuff like that. It was the Methodists that did it.
Absolutely. Great examples. One or two others.
Who was the German pastor during Nazi Germany?
Bonhoeffer. Okay. A lot of good stuff you can read about Bonhoeffer. And don't watch the movie. Read the book. What else?
I like the pro-life clinics that are out there and just quietly doing, you know, meeting women where they're at and saving lives.
Right. So
schools, hospitals.
Absolutely. So you can see it's not impossible, guys. It's not futile. It's not fatalistic. This can be done. Why? Disciples, Jesus talks about the rich young ruler goes away after he says, I've kept all these commandments. One thing you lack, give all your possessions away. He goes away sad. Jesus says it's darn near impossible, or he says it's very hard. Excuse me, he didn't say that. I don't want to misquote Jesus. It's being recorded too, so Kevin left the room, but he's going to come back in a minute. With God, all things are possible, right? So this doesn't have to be fatal. Okay, let's take the next half hour and let's talk through a little bit. I'm just going to get kind of nitty gritty. So again, I apologize in advance, not meaning to be graphic, but this is the culture we live in. And I think for far too long, the church tends to retreat from controversial things and not want to talk about them because it's hard. And we think we're going to encounter resistance and we don't know how to talk about these issues. You guys heard me say 2 weeks ago that what Thaxter's doing on Thursdays with the Stand, Reason, Outpost and learning how to take critical thought and think through things from an apologetic standpoint and how to engage culture, there's a lot of overlap here. So if you guys have time on Thursdays at noon, come join Thaxter and the people that are participating in that, because I think you'll learn a lot. Okay, these are the undercurrents. You see I got a little picture of the iceberg at the top and the what's underneath, right? That's always what the danger is, if you will. So let's start with the information age. Society is no longer dominated by factories or farms, but by glowing screens. Like my glowing screen, right? It's not just information, but it's also ideas. And since the advent of the internet, I think we could all agree that things have just accelerated rapidly. You've heard this term, you've heard the term information overload, but there's also a term out there that kind of came to prominence in the last few years about information psychosis and what it does to you. Having this amount of information available to you immediately, you can know what's going on in Nepal or Bangladesh, right? The world grown smaller with the advent of technology. Just a couple of quick tidbits on information. On a daily basis, there's 500 million tweets are sent. 4 million hours of content uploaded to YouTube. I haven't even gotten to TikTok yet. It's banned, so I can't talk about it anyway. So, 4.3 billion Facebook messages posted. 6 billion Google searches. There's 8 billion people in the world. There's 6 billion searches. Mm-hmm. Isn't that crazy?
And that's 3 people doing all of
that. That's 3 people doing all of that. But I'm done. So, classic. 205 billion emails are sent. This data is 3 or 4 years old. It's also full of ideas, too, right? Information isn't just like going to the internet and reading the encyclopedia, right? That information is conveying ideas. And if we learn anything from last week, ideas have consequences, either good or bad. And this has definitely impacted our kids, because my kids don't know what it's like to grow up without this. And this isn't just a phone, this is a computer. Crazy that Steve Jobs said, I want everyone to have a personal computer. And he was thinking about just this. Think about that. I've said this before, but isn't it interesting there's a piece of fruit with a bite out of it on it? Isn't that interesting? Sorry, I digress. But information is something that our kids don't know anything. They don't know a world that looks like with a rotary phone or a telegraph or a post office where the dude got on the horse and delivered the mail. None of that, right? They don't know any of that. But I would also argue that it's affected the rest of us too. This is definitely a huge undercurrent that conveys a ton of ideas that we don't realize we're being impacted by or not. I would argue sometimes the way that we react to, I say news, but I mean information, is not because it's happening everywhere all the time at the same time, like it's that big of a problem. The information age has created a situation where one guy has a megaphone in a sea of people where conversations are going on all the time, but what do you hear? Just the guy with the megaphone. It has the ability to saturate from an information standpoint and shape the way you look at things. So from a believer standpoint, you actually have to start learning how to synthesize data and the information that you're receiving. Know the difference between what clickbait is and what's real information, right? Identity after Christianity. Okay, I think we can all argue that this is definitely a huge undercurrent that we see, but it's more than just identity around gender and sexuality. Feelings trump objective truth. So you become, Mike talked about this last week with the modern self, right? Where you start to believe who you are based on how you feel rather than what's objectively true about you, right? So if you feel like a 6'5" Chinese woman, but you're really a 5'5" white guy like me, but if I feel like a 6'5" Chinese woman, I can be that day, right? That's essentially what's happening here. Feelings are king. Our sexual inclinations and desires are more important than objective truth. We've actually lost what it means to be human because we don't know. We don't know what we're here for. Because those six guys that Mike talked about last week have totally screwed it up to the point that you start thinking about all kinds of bizarre stuff about yourself. So once God's removed from the picture, the Proverbs 29 passage, right? Well, what do we worship now? We call these the five S's: state, sex, self, science, or should I say scientism, and stuff. That's what we wrap our identity in, right? We've replaced God with those things. All right, this is an interesting one. Alone but together. What do you think that means?
I have friends all over the world.
Okay.
Never met any of them.
Because of what?
Facebook. That phone.
Social media. Right?
Well, but it can also be, I remember vividly when I was studying Chinese, living in China, and a group of us went out to dinner, or out to lunch after class. There were about 10 people around the table. Every single person was on their phone talking to somebody else.
Yep.
Yeah.
And our team leader said, he sent a group text, everybody, put your phones down and talk to each other.
Yeah. That's it.
You know?
Yep. That's right.
Alone but together.
Yep. So life is lived online.
Yeah.
So now you have an alternative self, right? You can be whoever you want to be. It's all about clicks. You have a loss of intimacy. You lose touch with one another. You don't even know how to hold a conversation.
Yep.
Yes, Kate.
I noticed so much in a lot of younger people, but some older, they're walking down the street looking at their phone, and I don't even really think they're engaged with their phone. I think they have a fear of not being enough or good enough or recognized. So they hide behind that technology.
Right.
It makes them look important, you know, engaged. You know.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. So you're alone and together at the same time, right? You're online with millions of people, but yet you're alone. Mm-hmm. You become the center of your universe, or it's all about what I deserve, or I'm my own authority. All I need is information, right? This is a real interesting, I call it the I syndrome. You're the center, you deserve, you have choices, you have authority, you have information. So therefore you don't need anything else, much less a relationship or community, right? Yes?
But you know, I think it's interesting because like with COVID and when people were isolated and how that had a negative effect,
this. We're designed for this. Face-to-face interaction. That's right. That's how we're wired. Perpetual adolescence. Okay, I know Emily brought up those things around school and how kids behave. But the problem is, I think you could actually extend some quote-unquote experts out there, I hate using that term, describe adolescence as now, well, before I say this, how would you define adolescence? What age group would you think it represents?
It used to be the teenagers.
Yeah,
10
yeah.
to 18. Yeah. Used to end at 18.
Yeah.
Not 26.
11 to 30.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
That's
oh,
what people are saying now. 30 years old.
Yeah, I can be on my mom and dad's health insurance till I'm 26.
Yeah, and living in the basement playing video games.
I have a complaint to make. I feel like I've been wrong.
Yeah.
I'm still eligible for this.
That's
right. Not according to your parents. No. The expert said I still have 4 more years.
We booted him out. What can I say?
Good job, Andrew.
That's awesome.
Yes. Hey, Greg.
Yes, sir.
There was an article in the Wall Street Journal this week talking about 30-year-old men who are still in adolescence who may never grow out of it.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a problem, of course. Reason why is because kids are exposed to way a lot more stuff these days, right? Mm-hmm. Not just from a sexual standpoint, but just information in general. Mm-hmm. Delayed marriage. You have people that become professional students that want to stay in college for the rest of their life. You know, the 50-year-old college student. And I don't mean that as a negative. I just mean it's one thing to want to be learning. It's another thing to want to leave the college lifestyle. Yeah. Right? Moral infancy. We don't know how to handle ideas, so therefore we don't even understand what morality actually is and how we should go about behaving in such a way. So you have a lot of moral infants out there. They're illiterate when it comes to morality. Why? Well, because of the one above. It's all about them. Right? This leads to a lack of courage, which leads to a loss of virtue. And when you have loss of virtue, what happens? Well, then the state has to step in and create more laws. Because you don't have a shared culture. Right? We no longer hold the same things as important. Because it's all about I and what I want. And if what I want is different than what you want, then the state has to come in and arbitrate. Right? It's a vicious cycle. But what also happens with a lack of courage and a loss of virtue is Proverbs 29. The wicked rule and the people groan. Because you don't have any men. I don't mean that derogatorily. You have no courage. With John Adams, our society was, our form of government is for a virtuous people. Because only virtuous people can self-govern. And I'm not trying to go into an American history experiment, but there's some wisdom in that, right?
It's wholly unsuitable for any other.
It's unsustainable, right? These are the undercurrents that go on underneath the surface that we're all impacted by. But what happens is we get slapped in the face with the bigger waves that these currents produce. I had to put this up here. This is Nazarene. So I lived in Southern California for a while, and I got very enamored with surf culture. This is one of the biggest swells in the country on a yearly basis. In fact, the guy that broke the world record for the biggest wave ever surfed was at this place. The 100-foot wave the guy surfed, you can imagine. This right here is a point that comes off the coast where all these people gather to watch these waves. I've never been there, of course, but I've seen a ton of images of Nazarene, and it's that big. It's that big every winter. This is kind of what it feels like to be in society when these cultural waves are coming at you, right? They feel so impactful. What are they? Okay, well, let's talk about a few of them. We don't have to dive into super graphic detail, but we do need to talk about them. These are the waves that we see as, they're just so obvious in our culture, they feel so insurmountable, but they're not. Now, as we look at these, let's start to think about, maybe take one of them and just start rifling through in your head, how you would engage that particular issue from what is good that we can promote, what's missing that we can contribute, what's evil that we need to stop, and what's broken that we need to restore. Right? All right. Pornography. 1/3 of the internet's bandwidth. Multi-billion dollar industry. That doesn't just consist of what you see on the screen. It's what's happening in Southeast Asia, Latin America, Western Europe, Eastern Europe, from a trafficking standpoint. All of that stuff contributes to the rise of this industry. And it's a huge problem.
And I would argue that it happens here as well.
Yes.
Oh, absolutely.
So, a couple statistics. Don't let your jaw hit the floor. 90% of boys, 60% of girls before they're 18 have been exposed to it. Christian men, 64%. Christian women, 15% admit to watching it once a month. Monthly. Right? It's a problem. Why? Information, life lived online, create my own reality, all the downstream effects from pornography and how it affects marriage, how it affects relationships with other people, most importantly, how it affects your relationship with God. It's not what God designed us for. Huge problem. Okay, hookup culture. Sorry for the slang, but I think it's a good way to describe some of these things. Basically, sex without consequences or sex without reproduction. When you separate sexuality and sex and what God created it for from the things that He designed it for reproduction as well as enjoyment, what do you have?
Okay.
Yes, ma'am.
This is kind of a newer thing. Is everybody familiar with hookup culture? Everybody knows? Okay, yeah.
Yeah. So 62% of college students report hooking up, which leads to the rise of consequences. Unwanted pregnancy, I should say unwanted, STDs, depression, distorts marriage, and it distorts God's design for sex. I got to move fast here because I got 13 minutes. Orientation and gender. Probably one of the biggest ones in the last several years, right? Now it's assigned. It's not about biological reality. It goes back to the comparison I made about wanting to be a 6'5" Chinese woman. There's no difference. Suddenly, because I feel like a woman trapped in a man's body, therefore it's reality. So feelings become reality as opposed to objective truth, right? This is heartbreaking. It's something that we recoil at, but it's heartbreaking, right? It's chosen, it's not innate anymore. Or some people believe gender is just a social construct. You know what I mean by that language? Social construct is if I live in Europe, I'm a product of my environment. So there's no objective truth that transcends all people. It's just what we socially construct in our own little culture. Make sense? If we use that logic, then you can't condemn Nazism because it's just a social construct, right? What happens is that with this particular issue, instead of confronting it from a biblical standpoint, we actually enable it. Why? Because we want to be nice. Where niceness trumps love. Right? The most loving thing you can do is tell someone the truth, even if that means you don't sound nice. Right? So what we do is we actually validate people's thoughts and desires. We enable them, thinking that they'll flourish by making them feel better. When your instruction from a biblical standpoint is to love somebody, not make them feel loved.
Isn't that the way that the devil works?
Right.
Deception, right?
Right.
Tell them a lie.
Right. So, a couple of quick lies that we hear about this particular one. And I'm sorry, I'm moving so fast. Here's one that goes back to the information age, right? Christians don't do anything with gay people except treat them horribly. That is a lie. it becomes perception because of the megaphone effect, right? Okay? Gay people are born this way. It's just as normal as heterosexuality, or it's a social construct. These are all lies, right? Consumerism. Won't spend too much time on this, but happiness becomes more about what you own, and you are what you own, right? Your stuff, what you consume. Addiction, which you can relate addiction to the top one now too, but we're talking more about drugs and alcohol and all kinds of other things that we become addicted to. But I would argue that we become addicted to this too, right? But addiction is one of those things where we think that just because it's legal means it's recreational only, right? And that's not true, right? I mean, look at the rise of the legalization of marijuana, which is a gateway drug. There's a ton of research on marijuana, the devastating effects that it has on people.
Or how normal it is. Like, I saw a parent on TV, the son had died by drugs in there. All he was doing was, he'd been studying for his exam, he had a headache, and he wanted to buy a whatever it is, and it was contaminated.
Yep.
And like it was normal to go out and buy an illegal drug.
It's crazy. Entertainment. This is a fascinating one. If you have not read this book, very easy read, Amusing Ourselves to Death, Neil Postman, written in 1985. Not a believer, Jewish man. One of the most amazing critical analysis of what technology has done to our country. This is written in 1985. I highly recommend this book. It's very good. It's easy read too. But entertainment. So we think we're just made for pleasure and enjoyment, right? Which is true, but what is the chief end of man?
Glorify God.
And?
Enjoy God.
Glorify God and enjoy him forever. Psalm 16, at your right hand are pleasures forevermore. That's David talking about God, and he uses the word pleasure, right? Your law is better than, or sweeter than honey, better than fine gold. Scripture's littered with how God is to be enjoyed. But we seek it in entertainment. The crazy thing about entertainment is it's not just listening to some good music or going watching a play or watching a movie or whatever. What do all of those things contain?
Ideas
that are trying to shape you. An author of a book has an intent. A screenwriter has an intent. A filmmaker has an intent. It may not be purposely malicious, but you do have to learn how to critically analyze it, right? This is a very dangerous one. And I would argue our society, we're amusing ourselves to death, right? Okay, the last one, racial tension. I'm not gonna spend a ton of time on this one, not because I'm avoiding it. Actually, we're gonna spend the next 2 weeks talking about that one. And social justice. So I'm pushing it to next week if that's okay. But just real quick, this isn't just an American problem. Obviously our country has a history with racial tension, but this is a human problem. Slavery and racism have been going on since Cain killed Abel, right? It becomes more about you are your ethnicity as opposed to a human being. Well, and then some of us bury our head. It's non-existent. People need to get over it. Well, that's not true. If you believe in original sin, then obviously that's not true. Racism's happening in the U.S. everywhere all the time. Well, if you look at the trajectory of our country, you can see that actually progress has been made. Maybe not ultimate perfect progress, but it's been made. Okay, take one of those, and let's look at it from the perspective of what's broken, what's good that we can promote, what's missing that we can contribute, what's evil that we need to stop, what's broken that we can restore. Anybody want to take a stab at that?
In all of those cases, as far as what's good, almost all of those things start with the goodness of God. C.S. Lewis says, they've been spoiled. Right? So,
right.
You look at sex or gender or even the things that we have or entertainment, all those things in and of themselves started out as a good thing, for us to enjoy and to, just to enjoy that God gave us, and then so I'm not taking this as, we could take one, I mean, you could take the book of culture and say, hey, sex, what's good about that? People want to have sex, that's probably a good thing. You know, ultimately, in God, how God, you know, we populate the earth and how we grow in families and all the good things that come from a result of that. So I would say maybe from that standpoint, that's a good thing. And we don't want our kids and our people to avoid that, you know, in an ultimate sense, right?
Oh, sorry. My bad. Yep, absolutely. Anybody else?
We've made them all idols. They've gone from something that God created for good, that they're gifts, and we put them on a throne.
Right. Absolutely. In other words, you've done what Mike talked about last week with all these thought processes and thinkers throughout the last 300-400 years. We've replaced God. Thinking that these things in and of themselves, whether it's my ethnicity, my desire for pleasure, my stuff, what I feel like, instead of what God says about you. Now, we look at this and we kind of, again, the tendency is to feel kind of like this is impossible. What has Christianity done for Western civilization? Just built it.
It's the foundation.
It is the foundation. So think through what you know about culture and how you can actually engage it with the gospel and transform it the same way God's done the greatest miracle in each of our lives, which is open our eyes to the truth of who he is and transform us. Because if you have met Christ and God has opened your eyes, there's no way you're going to be different. I mean, no way you're going to be the same. I'm sorry.
Right.
You're going to be different. You're going to be different. Romans 12, right? Paul spends the entire first part of Romans talking about, or first three or four chapters talking about how bad we are, right? And the biggest but in the Bible, but God, right? And then he gets to chapter 12 and he says, in view of the mercies of God, I urge you, brethren, to do what? Be transformed, right? So you've been transformed, now go transform culture. Now you may look at all this and go, gosh, how do I do that? Okay, not necessarily a book plug, but a lot of the information is based on this book, Practical Guide to Culture. John Stone Street guy quoted earlier with another guy named Brett Kunkel. It's a very practical book. In other words, it's not just talking about the problems, it's actually giving you action steps on how to lead your families, if you will, from a father-mother perspective, from a grandparent perspective, from a workplace perspective, right? How can we engage folks that are living in a culture that shaped them to believe that these things are king as opposed to God? Any questions? That is a ton of information. Mm-hmm. Next 2 weeks, we're going to talk about justice. And we'll talk about racial tension for sure. Yes, Emily.
I think it's Pascal who said that we all have a God-shaped vacuum.
Augustine,
okay. Then in all of this, one of the things that, from what I understand, and somebody may have a better information than I do, is that this generation is looking for authenticity.
Mm-hmm.
They're looking for real, no kidding, people. And I think if we love God, then that frees us up to go love other people, because all of these are trying to fill that need, that want, that desire for somebody who truly knows them and loves them, just like we are. I mean, so for we've all fallen into some of those traps. But I think knowing God frees us to go love our fellow human beings.
Absolutely.
And reflect that love of God.
Yep.
And I think that's one of the ways that I know I fall short, but that's the best tool I have, is to go love other people as God loved me.
Absolutely. 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 Any other questions? Is this helpful? Hey, this whole exercise we've been on for the last 3 weeks, really what we're trying to do here is give you a little bit of 30,000-foot view of culture and and worldview, and then take that into practical steps, if you will, using some of the some of those pressing issues that we talked about earlier. We're going to get even more didactic and practical next week. We're going to talk about justice and misconceptions about it. What is biblical justice? And how should the believer interact? We'll get real practical. Always hate to give like commands, because I think the greatest command is to do what Emily said, love God, love people, and don't try harder. Just run to Jesus. Let him change you, right? So that's what we're trying to do. So we'll do justice over the next 2 weeks. After that, we're going to talk about progressive Christianity or liberal Christianity, and some practical steps with that. Then we'll round things out at the end of February with some what we call worldview essentials to put in your holster. So, anything else? Let me pray for us. Father, thank you so much for who you are. Thank you for this time. I pray this has been illuminating for some of us, for we that we would learn how to love you better, love people better, be more culturally literate, understand the things that are being communicated to us through technology and information and entertainment and all these other things that we discussed today, that we would respond to them in a way that demonstrates that we love you and we reflect the truth of who you are back to the culture, for two reasons: to proclaim the gospel so that people would come to know you and be delivered from their sin, and number two, to transform culture, to build your kingdom. And we need your help to do that. We cannot do that on our own. Thank you for this time. I pray that you bless the rest of our day and the rest of our time here as we go into worship. And thank you so much for your son and all that he's done for us. His name, amen.